Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1625, air date December 15th, 2025.
I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. Looking forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. show. Dr. P.L. De Silva. Dr. De Silva has over 20 years of experience in background diplomacy, mediation, and negotiation. He has taught politics, international relations, and several graduate and undergraduate programs at universities in New York, New Jersey, Long Island, and Queen's University of Belfast in Northern Ireland. Dr. De Silva's publications include Postmodern Insurgencies, Political Violence, Identity Formation, and Peacemaking in Comparative Perspective. He's the co-founder with Professor W.D. Lakshman, former Vice Chancellor of the University of Colombo, and the International War-Related Trauma and Humanitarian Intervention Trust, IWTHI Trust, setting up psychosocial training programs for practitioners serving combatants, non-combatants during the Sri Lanka Civil War. Dr. De Silva, welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show.
Thank you, Jesse. Glad to be on the show.
Our very special guest is Dr. Shiva Ayadure, MIT, PhD, and check this out. The inventor of email, candidate for U.S. president and polymath, holds 4 degrees from MIT and is world-renowned systems scientist. He is a Fulbright scholar, Lemelson MIT Awards finalist, first outstanding scientist and technologist of Indian origin, Westinghouse Science Talent Honors Award recipient, and was nominated for the U.S. National Medal of Technology and Innovation in 1982. The U.S. government recognized Dr. Ayadure as the inventor of email by awarding him the first copyright for email at a time when copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. Dr. Shiva, welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show.
Great to be here, Jesse. How are you? Good to see
Great.
You.
Great. I am so particularly honored that you are here, and I think we should probably all just take a bow for a moment for just how convenient you've made all of our lives with your thinking and with your inventions. We are so grateful.
Thank you.
Dr. De Silva, I want to ask this question of both you and Dr. Shiva, and it centers around the alienation of the United States globally under the mismanagement of Donald Trump. Dr. De Silva, let me begin with you. How devastating to the national and international reputation of the United States has this mismanagement?
So the thing is this, under Trump, we have eroded soft power. Soft power is what gives the U.S. its clout. So one of the first things that hurts off U.S. soft power was the dismantling of USAID, USAID. And this has huge ramifications worldwide. So that's one. Number two, on the hard power side, look at what's happening in Venezuela. We are losing our allies. The British, the Dutch, and others are limiting or stopping intelligence sharing with us. That's just the two examples that we need to bring of how the U.S. is losing friends, allies, and, on the soft power and hard power side, but also on the trade front. On the trade front, everybody else who wants to do free trade are coalescing together, and the U.S. is left with a rump of countries. And today, China has a trade surplus of over $1 trillion for the first time. And this is with reducing their exports to the U.S. by one third. So just go figure. And the list goes on and on and on. We are losing the plot. The economy is in bad shape. Americans are feeling the pinch. Tariffs are actually an additional tax burden on the U.S. people, and it's the poor who are being downtrodden, and the migrants, higher education, you know, the list goes on, Environmental Protection Agency, you name it, right? And I'm very interested to hear what Dr. Shiva has to say about the health industry. He's an insider, and I've known Dr. Shiva since, 1985, 86, it's a long time, and I would like to hear his thoughts.
Neil, as you know, our longest segment the program is just after the break, where Dr. Shiva can share with us for 20 minutes those thoughts. I do want to ask him in the minute that we do have before the break, the mismanagement of the global and the goal of alienation of Donald Trump and its impact in terms of U.S. reputation. Dr. Shiva, we have about
45 minutes. I think very briefly, my position on this is U.S. imperialism has become much more naked. You know, in the past, prior to Trump, imperialism had two faces, right? This hard power and the soft power. And I think what the elites in the United States want to do away with is they recognize they don't need the soft power. They're just going to be heavy-handed to consolidate power in a much more accelerated way. So I think that's what's happened with the elimination of USAID or defunding of certain programs. Those programs, in many ways, were systems which enabled this hard power to have a friendly face. And I think Trump coming in is saying to the world, I don't need to have a friendly face. I'm just going to do whatever I want with just bold, emboldened imperialism. And I think this has happened because we can probably talk about this after the break, because of the fact that the left and the right in many ways have capitulated to this centralized power against the interests of the working people in this country.
I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. listening to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. This is Worldwide with P.L. De Silva and our very special guest, Dr. Shiva Ayyadure. More when we come forward on the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. Welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. On KBLA Talk 1080. It's not for Book and Thursdays on the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. In this hour is Dr. Shiva Ayyadure, MIT PhD and inventor of the email. And just before the break, Dr. Shiva, we were talking about imperialism, more specifically alienation and mismanagement under Donald Trump and its consequences for the United States and for global order. I didn't want to interrupt you before the break, but please take your time and continue.
Yeah, I think what I was sharing was, just to summarize, I think under Trump and with the consolidation of power, profit and control, I think I call it the swarm, which is a distributed, you know, international network of elites. They realized that they don't need to have soft power at all. In their view, the soft power was essentially an expense item on their profit and loss statement. And why even have soft power? You just go all out against everyday working people, wherever they are. And I think that consolidation of power is accelerating under Trump. If we want to talk about healthcare, if we want to move to that, obviously human health is one of the most prominent features every working person faces, right? When, if they unfortunately happen to get unhealthy or even maintenance of health. And I think to educate the audience, one of the important features of the healthcare system that is not brought up is the collusion between the insurance companies, the large hospitals, and what are called GPOs. And I want to discuss that. And this is not really discussed in much of the discourse on bringing down healthcare costs. What's happened in the current administration with, I call him Booby Kennedy, but you call him Robert F. Kennedy, and his NIH director, as well as, you know, the FDA head, they knew that the American public was extremely upset at the healthcare system during COVID, post-COVID, and people are looking for solutions. And there was a lot of anger. So the MAGA movement brought in these fake fighters, Kennedy at the prominent, one of it who waffles all over the place, but he presents himself to the MAGA base as though he's fighting for healthcare. But the reality is he's doing the technique of claiming he's going after Big Pharma, but the reality is Big Pharma is actually going to get bigger because the framework that he's put in place is to act like he's going after Big Pharma and putting a regulatory framework that's actually going to destroy a lot of the emerging biotechs because they won't be able to afford the framework. Pharma will be fine. But the deception here even goes much deeper. So if you go back in the 1970s, if you just think about, perhaps Jesse, you were running a hospital, PL, you were running a hospital, and I ran a hospital. And each of us, and if you think about a hospital has all different types of equipment, right? Beds, bedpans, insulin, right? Catheters, all the things that take to run this hospital. So pillows, right? So let's say each one of us were buying 50 pillows for our hospital. And we were paying, you know, $10 a pillow. At some point, three of us got together and we said, hey, why don't we, instead of purchasing 50 pillows individually, if we consolidated our buying power, we'd be purchasing 150 pillows. So we went to, or we created people called a group purchaser. And that group purchaser was our agent. And instead of each of us buying 50, he'd go to the vendor and say, look, I got 150 pillows. And so bang, 10 bucks, you get a better deal, right? $5. So GPOs came at the behest of hospital administrators, hospital owners, to try to lower the cost of the equipment. Well, as this progressed, something fascinating occurred. The GPOs flipped the model because they were controlling all the supply of pretty much every item into a hospital. And I believe in late 1990s, early 2000, Congress allowed GPOs to legally give kickbacks to hospital administrators, legalized corruption. So it ended up happening.
Congress did that, Dr. Shiva? Congress allowed them to legally do that?
Yes. So what ended up happening was that GPOs controlled all the supply. So instead of giving the huge discounts that they would do before, they would still give a discount and give a kickback in all sorts of very clever ways. You know, maybe the hospital administrator would get a nice vacation at a 7-star hotel, right? And so on, to continue not really benefiting the hospital per se and the patients with lower costs, but some kickback to the hospital administrator. They made money. And what's interesting is the GPOs essentially never owned anything. They just owned a contractual relationship, right? So they became sort of the man behind the curtain. And recently, I believe in the last 3 years, I did a whole video presentation on this, 3 to 5 years, actually starting in more than that, in the last 7 years, three major GPOs emerged. Those three GPOs were bought by the three major insurance companies, health insurance companies. So you have no price transparency. So if you go and get a bill for some procedure that you did at a hospital, the interesting thing is no one ever actually knows the actual cost, what actually took place. Okay. So during COVID, people are buying all these lung machines, right? What was the actual cost and what was actually being billed, right? So even if an individual gets a procedure done, if they try to go through the costs are massively inflated. So now you would think that insurance companies want lower costs, right? What's actually not true. What's fascinating is the insurance companies actually want to keep costs high, because the vast majority of people are paying premiums. Now, the reason you get insurance is you say, oh my God, if I got into an awful car accident, I may have to pay a lot. So I'm going to pay $1,000, $2,000 for insurance a month to protect me against that potential situation. So I'll give you an example. A friend of mine's true example, he had to get some surgery done. The surgeon said, look, if you come inpatient, which means you actually come into the hospital, you're going to have to pay like 10 grand, but just get a hotel room, pay $135, and you just come in and I'll do the surgery. It'll be like a couple grand. Well, the insurance company would not allow it. Okay. So he had to pay 10 or 20 grand. So the incentive is to charge high because the GPOs are making money on each of those transactions. And if the GPOs are owned by the insurance companies, that's another source of revenue. So the insurance companies, essentially with this unholy alliance with GPOs, they're incentivized to make sure that the cost of doing anything is very, very high. And no one has addressed this issue. Okay. The other side on drugs, the similar sister of GPOs are called PBMs, pharmacy broker managers. And there's three of them which control the supply chain of every drug to every pharmacy in the United States, right? Probably in the world. Those three PBMs have also been bought by the three insurance companies. So if you are, you can go after big pharma and they should be gone after. However, let's say you start a pharmaceutical company and you have a drug. For you to get that drug distributed, you're gonna need to create an alliance with a PBM because they own the entire supply chain. So this is what has happened. These two sort of men behind the curtain, PBMs and GPOs, are controlling the flow of every item into a hospital. This is why some hospitals who don't want to play in this game, it's not that extraordinary to find hospitals having insulin shortages, saline shortages, because the GPOs are controlling that supply so they could direct supply to the hospitals that pay them their kickback, you know, play, and those that don't. So this is a fundamental back end that why healthcare costs are high. It's one fundamental reason. The other piece of this is the entire innovation process in healthcare. You know, the innovation of a drug. So today, if you think about any drug, what is a drug? Typically a drug, forget the mRNA platform for a second, is a synthetic compound that is synthesized in a lab. And that, and in order for that synthetic compound to find a home, and there's 60,000 of these synthetic compounds, a researcher at MIT will take that compound, I'm giving you sort of the short version of it, will throw that compound into a test tube, let's say it's got cancer cells, and says, oh, I see something happening here. They will then go raise money, $40, $50 million, let's say from a VC, to create their company. Then they'll go do animal testing. Now, the test tube testing is called in vitro. The animal testing is called in vivo. That process takes 6 years. If it makes it out of that animal testing, which means it doesn't kill too many animals, that compound drug will then have to get FDA allowance, which takes another 2 years to go into clinical trials. So you're looking at almost 8 years to get it to clinical trials. Okay. And clinical trials are phase one, phase two, phase three. Phase one is, you know, a couple hundred people, phase two, thousands, phase three is tens or hundreds of thousands. And that process takes around $5 billion and 13 years. Okay. And then if you look at the fact that from the time the discovery took place of the drug, they patented it, which is 20 years patent life. So if it takes 13 years to get that drug out of phase one, phase two, phase three, the pharma companies only have 7 years to recoup all their investments before it becomes generic. So this process is a very medieval process. It is archaic. It doesn't work, but big pharma keeps moving down that path because the relationship between big pharma and the Silicon Valley Wall Street incentivizes, because at any point as a drug makes it across these processes, you get an uptick in the stock price, phase one, phase two, phase three. And it's not really the FDA per se. It is the fact that the process itself is old and archaic. You know, but there are solutions to both these problems. One is a horrible innovation model. This is why pharma had to move to the mRNA platform very rapidly, because this other model was failing. If you look back at 2019, Pfizer's revenue, which was at $60 billion, was dropping, had dropped down to $40 billion. Okay? So the pharma companies know that they're on a disaster course, and they need to course correct. This is why the mRNA platform was pushed through. You know, it has some considerable issues that have not been tested very rapidly in order to save this failing industry. And Trump and Biden were both part of it. Trump will act like he was against it, but the reality is, you know, his inauguration and Biden's inauguration was both funded by Pfizer, you know, for $1 million. So the reality is pharma has serious problems. So they need people like Kennedy in there, who's great for them because he acts like he's a fighter against big pharma. But the reality is he's creating a regulatory framework that's going to enable new innovations not to be able to compete in a proper marketplace. So again, it gets back to this issue we're talking about later. The elites are consolidating power in multiple ways as never before. And in my view, because there's not a serious opposition to what's taking place, and the people want to oppose this don't understand the dynamics that I just talked about. So they're talking about solutions, quote unquote solutions, which are never going to really address the root cause issues.
You know, I'm sitting here somewhat amazed, because when I think about the average member of Congress for the 17 years that I had the privilege of serving there, they simply cannot wrap their minds around much of what you've said, from the GPOs to the PBMs and the control of every single item that goes in and out of a hospital, and this shakedown operation
that
essentially allows a corruption legalized to take place. So, Dr. Shiva, I know when we come forward, I want to start with the basic, the least of these, the most vulnerable, and people who need the right to healthcare of equal high quality as a function of it being a human right, regardless of their age, from womb to tomb, as a structure of the government itself. The separate and unequal system, or even the system that relies upon a Secretary of Health and Human Services to have his way with the nation's health care, inevitably will leave millions of Americans behind. When we come forward, I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. We're having a very deep conversation with Dr. Shiva Ayyadure, as well as P.L. Da Silva on Worldwide with P.L. Da Silva. We're trying to get to the bottom of the nation's health crisis. More when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580. Jesse Jackson Jr., you're listening to Day Lunch Club on KBLA Talk 1580. It's Thought Provoking Thursdays with Dr. P.L. Da Silva, who is an experienced director with a demonstrated history of working in think tanks, industry, and academia, United Nations political and military affairs, stabilization operations, and the private sector, financial services, and oil and gas, in research, political risk analysis, geopolitical strategy, cultural diplomacy, and humanitarianism. He is an extraordinary individual who hosts our program on Thursdays, Worldwide with P.L. Da Silva, and our very special guest today, Dr. Shiva Ayyadure. His interest in human health began early when he was a child. He observed his grandmother, a village farmer, a healer, and a practice of Siddha, India's oldest system of traditional medicine. This motivated his future study and research in systems biology at MIT, leading to his discovery of systems health, a major breakthrough that provides integrative framework linking Eastern and Western medicine. Dr. Shiva Ayyadure, in addition to his many accomplishments, is the inventor of the email. Dr. Shiva, welcome forward, and PL, welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show.
Thank you.
Dr. Shiva, I need to go all the way down to the, from my perspective, for our listeners, to the end user. To expect the Congress of the United States, an institution that struggles with its own corruption, to be in a position to solve the corrupt problem that exists within American health care, which you so ably and articulately laid out for us, it seems to me that outside of the government structure itself, that 350 million Americans who need health care, when do they need it? Well, whenever they get sick, whenever they have an ailment. No one knows what the timing will be for whatever ailment, or whatever illness. But what we do know is that at the moment that we are stricken with that health crisis, we want the healthcare to be of extremely high quality. We want it to be applied equally, whether we are rich or we are poor. We want the finest physicians, the finest surgeons, the finest medicines that are available to help us resolve our problem. It seems to me in this moment that while we may look at the micro nature of the problem within hospitals and the items that hospital purchases and the kickbacks, et cetera, that the larger question that needs to be answered in our particular system is this: is healthcare a human right? Is it a state right? Is it a county right? Is it a right for rich individuals who can afford it? Is it a right, increasingly less so, for poor people who cannot afford it? Or whether or not we believe as a civilized nation that all Americans should enjoy the right to healthcare of equal high quality and therefore be empowered with the legal right to sue wherever this corruption takes place and take the entire system to court in all 50 states, in every single jurisdiction, whenever we as Americans find ourselves denied that fundamental right. Dr. Shiva.
Well, I think there's a number of aspects to the observations you've made. I think, let me go to the heart of the issue. What is healthcare? All right. Meaning, what is human health? And when you look at that aspect, there's really two aspects to that question. You see, the modern healthcare system that's practiced in the West came out of wartime medicine. It actually came out of the work of Florence Nightingale, who was more than just a nurse. She was actually a statistician. She was observing the Crimean War, and that soldiers were actually dying when they came to the hospitals. In the 1800s, you went to a hospital to die. They were filth everywhere. In fact, more soldiers were dying when they came to the hospital than dying of wounds on a battlefield. So she had this vision of creating a healthcare system where the goal was to put a soldier back on the field, right? So you had a particular problem, fixed it and got it back, got the soldier back out there, which was you cleaned up the hospitals, you created an environment, hopefully where research would take place, et cetera. So the key thing we need to understand here was that healthcare system, the architecture was designed for a crisis situation. When a crisis took place, the goal was to take care of that crisis, get the quote unquote soldier back on the field. So that architecture gave rise to steroids and amazing surgery and all this kind of stuff, right? Now that is a very different requirement and an end state than saying, I want to maintain my health. I want to live long. I want to be happy, right? Now, traditional systems of medicine, like my grandmother practiced, or traditional systems of medicine many cultures had, were based on that. How do you live in harmony with your body, right? That's a very different system of medicine. Does that make sense? Two very different. One was to put a soldier back on the field, a crisis management model. The other was to maintain health. What we have in the modern healthcare system is there's an incentive to get you into a crisis mode, not prevention. And then when you get into a crisis mode, you hit the person with artillery, which is very, very expensive, okay? And some of it actually doesn't work, okay? There is not an incentive to make the individual accountable for their health and do a series of things day to day, week to week, month to month to promote prevention, okay? So we have to decide which healthcare system do we want to support, okay? The preventative model or the crisis model. All the healthcare system is incentivized to be crisis care. And in that crisis model, the goal is never to cure anyone, but to keep treating a quote unquote disease.
To put them back on the battlefield.
What's that?
To put them back on the battlefield.
Or wait until you're so bad that you are in a crisis mode. In ancient and traditional systems of medicine, every disease had six phases. You know, phase one, we could cure it quickly. Phase two, phase three, four, five, six. Obviously, when you have a big tumor growing, that's in a crisis mode, okay? You have to hit it with chemotherapy and, you know, all these very, very harsh agents. So we need to understand this. This has not been in the public discourse when we talk about healthcare. In the former model, you incentivize the individual to take accountability for their health. What is occurring now is all of the structure is telling the individual not to take care of their health, to outsource it to this thing called the healthcare system, which, as we just discussed in the earlier section, is highly incentivized to keep the costs as high as possible. When you get someone coming into that system, the goal is to milk them for as much money as you can get, okay? And everyone who's been through this healthcare system will notice that, especially if you don't have any background, you're put into a phenomenon of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You're doing lots of tests, lots of procedures, and you don't even know where the end state is. So this is this. So to the end individual, obviously, taking care of your body and having the best opportunity to be well and live long should be a basic right. I mean, I don't think anyone would say it should not be, but the issue is how are we going to get there? Okay. And I would argue that the current model, even if you gave universal healthcare and you made healthcare free, quote unquote free, it's going to drain ultimately. It's going to come back to the citizens in some form because the entire structure is highly, highly corrupt. You see, so the costs. There is a solution to this, though.
Before we get to the solution, because we're going to do that right after the break, I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. You're listening to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show on KBLA Talk of 1580 with Dr. Shiva Ayadure and P.L. Da Silva. We are going to get to the solutions when we come forward. I'm Jesse Jackson Jr. Welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show on KBLA Talk 1580. Dr. Field, our regular contributor on Worldwide Field of Silva, and Dr. Shiva Ayadure, inventor of the email, PhD from MIT, extraordinary mind, and a major contributor to civilization. Let's just be candid about it. I want to cut right to the chase because I do want to get to Dr. Shiva's solutions for delivering real health. But I want to comment by just saying this very quickly. The poor are getting hammered under Trump, and the ultra-rich are getting richer. But it wasn't much better under Democrats, from my perspective. The fact that you can work one, two, or three jobs in America, and you still need affordable care? Because you can't afford affordable care at the end of one, two, or three jobs? Is a Democratic Party problem. If the market could provide high-quality health care for all Americans, it would have by now. We've practiced in this experiment enough with it. We need something to undergird it. Dr. Shiva has some solutions for delivering real health. Dr. Shiva, welcome forward to the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show and PL. Of course, welcome forward, Dr. Shiva. Thank you. Have about 8 minutes before we come forward and the top of
yes,
our show.
Yes, Jesse. I think one thing I want to say at the outset is, you know, when I was at MIT when I came there in 1981, you may remember that Reagan was in office and there were massive cuts taking place and a rollback of a lot of the gains that took place in the 60s and 70s. Your dad was running for office at that time in 84. It was him against Walter Mondale on the Democrat side. And your dad had a philosophy of bottoms up movements and people power. In many ways, the establishment of the Democratic Party didn't follow through on your dad's vision, in my view, you know, but I was truly inspired by his ideas. And, you know, we built a global movement called Truth Freedom Health. And it's really about empowering people to think bottoms up, which is sort of what your dad put forward. You know, he was one of the early, agents of this. So I never lost that idea. I just want to let you know. And we did a lot of campus activities.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, but this is where the real solution is going to come from. The existing systems are massively corrupt. They're massively entrenched to the extent that, you know, I'm running for Senate here, you're running for Congress, we get in. In my view, the best we can do is to use those platforms to expose this corruption and provide solutions, which can only come from below. Mm-hmm. So to people listening to this, you know, Hippocrates said, he who is not his own doctor is a fool. Now, this may seem like a tall order, but we have immense opportunities now for the individual to actually take control of their health. The reality is even the medical doctor that you go see is highly limited in what they can do. They're part of an entrenched system. The solutions that they offer in many ways can actually end up killing you or getting you into a worse situation. And this needs to be understood because what's happened is the academic model of research, which is very influenced by getting grants and getting grants and getting grants. So tenured professors who do biological sciences, they're not concerned about solving or treating or finding a cure to something. They're concerned about getting their next grant money. And I can give you many examples. We could do a whole show on this. But
I look forward to it.
We should talk about that. And the academic way that funding goes into funding any of these diseases is a collusion between the heads of departments of major academic institutions. They also sit on the board, those same guys, those professors, on the board of Big Pharma, and they also make the NIH decisions, right? So we're never gonna see major revolutionary solutions coming out of this entrenched culture. However, there is a lot of hope when you start considering the former ways that if the individual can say, okay, I have to take accountability for my health. To do that, that's a preventative model. And if I go see my doctor, I need to recognize that I'm entering the wartime medical model. That is for crisis care, okay? So the individual, and I think this can only happen through education. You know, people like us doing these things, reaching out to people, you need a movement to do this. It's not gonna come top down at all. So that's one thing that we have built. You know, we built a movement called Truth Freedom Health. We go educate people. A lot of nurses come to our movement because they see the problem in the existing health. They're actually activist nurses because they're in the trenches and they see the egomaniacal situations they deal with the hierarchy in hospitals. And they're having to fill in the gaps. So nurses are a great group for this bottoms-up movement. And we've seen it in our own systems health program. But the individual must take accountability for their health. That this is where it has to start. And to do that, it has to come with education. But the education must come recognizing that the body is a system. The ankle bone's connected to the foot bone. You can't be eating garbage and then trying to think you're going to be healthy, okay? You can't not do exercise and think you're going to be healthy. So it's a fundamental systems model that must be taught. And that's not being taught at all. To the extent that this quote-unquote Maha movement talks about it, they have no interest in actually doing that. Again, their goal is to consolidate a pharma's power. So one of the important solutions is education, the individual taking accountability. But getting back to the GPOs, with the 1987 law that was passed, just to be specific, it's really an anodyne term, quite ironic. Congress called it the anti-kickback statute, okay? And in that anti-kickback statute was given the safe harbor for GPOs to do kickbacks. That needs to be rolled back.
Wow.
Okay. It's quite amazing how these politicians did it. They called it the Anti-Kickback Act, but there's a nice carve out so GPOs can do kickbacks.
Or kickbacks.
Yeah. Right. So this is, Trump is a master of this, right? He'll tell you he's going to do this, but he's actually doing something else. Sleight of hand. So the Anti-Kickback Act, that safe harbor provision, must be removed. We need to educate people on a systems approach to health. Now, we've built an entire curriculum and made it very, very accessible to people. And that can be spread broadly. The medical...
Dr. Adrian, just before we move past that point, how can we get that information from you? Can you share with our listeners how they can learn more about that before...
Yes. People can go to truthfreedomhealth.com. We
created a whole... Can you say it slowly?
Truthfreedomhealth.com. And what we've done is, when I did research, Jesse, on looking at the ancient systems of medicine after I finished my PhD, what I found was these ancient systems of medicines actually looked at the body as an engineering system. What happened was the woo-woo people like Deepak Chopra, all these people, they made a lot of profit by putting this into a very, they built an aura around these ancient systems of medicine. So I uncovered these ancient systems of medicine were actually engineering systems, and you could educate people anywhere on this. So we created an entire course called Get Off the Plantation. It's free, okay? So people should go there. It's their first step, and they can go as many levels as they want. But that's one thing to teach people, to take a systems approach to the body. That's the first step. The other piece of this is the opportunity in the medical training itself. When an MD comes out of school right now, they got a lot of loans. And if they try to start their own practice to actually help people, that's all dead right now. There's no way a single practitioner who wants to do family medicine can even survive. So they're forced to go join big hospitals. You see? So what's happening is everything has moved. Even a noble person who wants to serve in medicine to go big. And when you go big, you never have these interactions one-on-one, because health actually emerges between the patient and the doctor in a collaborative relationship. It's not a top-down model. So,
I'm going to have you back on, because not only do I want to finish this conversation, I want to have you on to talk about your advocacy, your political work, and the campaign that you are mounting, which is, yes, obviously to win, but also to educate the American people. PL, I am particularly honored that Dr. DeShiva is our very special guest and that both of you have joined me on the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. When we come forward, there will be more on the Jesse Jackson Jr. Show. I want to thank our very special guest, PL DeSilva, as well as Dr. Ayadure, MIT PhD. More when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Thank you.
Be well. Thank you. Be the light. Thank you.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite, working people. There's only one movement that can do that, And that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left-wing, right-wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train an army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up, working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is a not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is a not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you, the Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. Or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement. And that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done. And it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own quote-unquote people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms-up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. And the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com so people can sign in. They can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhelp.com. Welcome to VA Shiva. VA Shiva is a product of my journey across East and West, science and tradition, ancient and modern, that brings you the science of systems so you can become a force for truth, freedom, health. VA Shiva is a platform of revolutionary education, community building and weaponry for unleashing local activism. My journey to VA Shiva begins in the chaos of Bombay, where I experienced diverse religions, languages, castes, and in a small village that had no running water, no electricity, where my grandmother, a poor village farmer, practiced Siddha, an ancient system of Indian medicine over 10,000 years old. She observed one's face, the art of Samudrika Lakshanam, to understand a body's unique constitution, allowing her to deliver the right medicine for the right person at the right time. Watching my grandmother heal others, I was inspired to study medicine, but I was also aware of the corrupt caste system of India, which denigrated a human being, where my family were considered low caste untouchables, where one's birth determined one's destiny. The grit and determination of my mother and father led them to get educated and to come to America, a one in a trillion event. Their actions inspired me to work hard and excel. While in ninth grade, I attended New York University in a computer science program, and subsequently, at the age of 14, was given a full-time job as a research fellow at what is now known as Rutgers Medical School in the heart of Newark, New Jersey. There, I investigated the system of sleep using mathematics, computer science, and biology for sudden infant death syndrome. It was there in Newark where I invented email when I was the first to convert every feature of the physical, paper-based inner office mail system, including inbox, outbox, memo, carbon copy, blind carbon copy, attachments, into its electronic equivalent, a system which I named email, a term that I was the first to coin. On August 30th, 1982, I was awarded the first U.S. copyright for the invention of this system, recognizing me as the inventor of email. At that time, copyright was the only way to protect software inventions. I went on to MIT, where I earned 4 degrees across multiple systems of engineering, electrical, mechanical, design, biological. That training led me to invent many other systems for advancing humankind. Echomail, the world's first intelligent email management system. Cytosolve, a computational biology system for eliminating animal testing to discover new medicines faster, cheaper, and safer. And to the creation of a whole systems methodology for certifying clean food. These innovations led me back on a Fulbright to India, where I discovered the missing link between Eastern medicine and Western systems theory, honoring my grandmother, to develop Your Body, Your System, a powerful tool that will help you understand how your body is a system and how the inputs of food, supplements, and exercise bring your body back to its natural system state. And Systems Health, an integrative educational discipline that is now integrated into the VA Shiva platform that will enable you to learn the science of systems, the science of everything, be it your body as a system or our society and politics as a system, to reveal the foundational interrelationships between truth, freedom, health. Now is the time for you to be the light, learn the science of systems, build community, and weaponize yourself to unleash the activism necessary to deliver truth, freedom, health in your local community. Welcome to VA Shiva.